very high mountains in Middlegard. There we stood in the bitter cold of an alpine winter, with him still dressed in his lightweight sleeping gown, and he informed me, even as he was freezing to death, that my existence was a lie, that I was tempting him as Satan tempted Christ.
I have no idea who you're talking about, said Anonoe.
I realized that he really did believe that what he was actually experiencing, the cold of the mountain wind, the sight of high mountains and snow all around him, was a delusion, a vision I had created to deceive him. I told him that the snow and the wind and the mountains were real, that he was lying to himself, and I wasn't even from the same planet as the person he called Satan. He informed me that I was the liar, and that's when I pointed out that I couldn't be lying, because I believed what I was telling him, while he knew perfectly well that the cold was real, so he was lying to me.
Another circular argument.
He told me that this only proved I was a better liar than he was. He admitted he felt the cold, which showed how powerful the illusion was. My obvious shivering from the cold did not change the fact that it was a delusion. If you lie to yourself, it's still a lie, says he, even if you do it so well that you believe it. A very wise man for a pope.
I take it pope is like king?
More or less, said Wad. I can meet with anybody I want. I can always get past the guards and bureaucrats.
Speaking of which, said Anonoe, I'm a bit concerned about Kiel. He seems to be quite urgently afraid at this moment.
Then maybe that's an excellent reason for you not to go.
Keep an eye on me, my castle monkey, and extricate me if there's any real danger.
At that moment, however, Wad sensed that someone was coming to Westall through the wild gate. Several people. More and more. Yet Danny North seemed oblivious to the fact. Certainly he wasn't sending them.
This is actually a very bad time for me to send you anywhere, especially anywhere dangerous, said Wad. Someone's coming through the wild gate.
What is the boy thinking? I thought you said he fully understood the danger of accidentally letting this dragon through to Westall, hidden inside the body of some traveler.
Danny North isn't doing it. Now he's finally noticed it, and he knew at once what was going on. One of his friends moved the gate.
Wad was impressed.
Clever girl, that Hermia. It's very hard to move someone else's gate without their noticing.
What are you going to do about it?
I have to go watch this end of the gate. As long as everyone turns around and goes straight back to Middlegard, there's no danger. But if somebody tries to stay...
That young wind mage stayed, said Anonoe.
Wad got out of bed and began to dress.
By the time Danny North helped me remember with clarity who our enemy is and what he can do, Sed was already here. I knew him well enough to be reasonably sure he was not possessed by Set.
And if some other arrival is possessed by Set, how will you know?
I won't. So anyone who tries to stay, I get him back to the return gate and push him through.
Aren't you afraid he'll possess you if you come so close?
By push, I didn't mean push, said Wad. Any would-be immigrant, I'll gate him to a point where he'll stumble directly into the wild gate the moment he emerges. I will never be near him. And Set can't jump so easily from one person into another, especially someone with a powerful inself, a Ka that won't just move out of the way.
You flatter yourself, said Anonoe.
Possibly, said Wad, but it's not the same as what you do. He jumps in with his whole Ka, but never having owned a body, worn the ape as his very self, it's harder for him to get in. So I think I could keep him out.
Anonoe rolled her eyes.
Send me to Kiel now, please, she said.
It's too dangerous, said Wad.
He was fully clothed now.
I'm going to be distracted watching all these people come through. I need to see them so I can remember them later, if they get past me somehow.
I'll be fine, said Anonoe.
Is Kiel a timid, fearful man?
A very bold and courageous one.
So whatever he fears, the danger is probably real.
But, my beloved Wadling, I'm me. Nobody can hold on to a notion of hurting me. I change their minds. I need you for transportation, not for rescue. Please respect my abilities as I respect yours. I'm not your prisoner anymore.
That is such a manipulative thing to say, said Wad.
If I were using Majory to control you, I wouldn't need to manipulate you with guilt.
Unless my conscience is entirely of your creation.
Alas, no, said Anonoe. There are times when I wish I could put out your conscience like a sputtering candle.
She began turning around and around.
Please send me through a gate into Kiel's office. There's no one there at this time of day.
Wad still had his misgivings, but she was right. She could take care of herself. It's not as if she was going to face someone as strong-willed as Bexoy, or, for that matter, Wad himself.
He sent her, still spinning like a child dancing.
If she tripped, it would be her own fault.
Then he went at once to a place near the stone circle where the wild gate lay. Sure enough, there were people milling around on the top of the hill. No one had left the circle yet, but too many of them were gazing around them instead of going back. And some of them were trying to use their powers. From inside a circle with an active gate, didn't they know anything? No, of course they didn't. And apparently the Greek girl who stole the mouth of the wild gate didn't think to come through herself and make sure everyone returned. So Wad retrieved the gate he had used to send Anonoe, made it into a large public gate, and placed it directly in front of the inbound gate, setting it so it would transfer people immediately to the outbound one. That used up 4 of his 8 gates. He used another gate to pop each of the loiterers to the mouth of the outbound great gate. Just a matter of tidying things up. It was fortunate that no one on Middleguard had the slightest experience with gates. They would no doubt think that any glitches were just a part of the process, and if they suspected someone caused them to return immediately with no chance to look around, they would doubtless blame the Greek girl. And if they were angry, it would serve her right. If he still had even a serious fraction of his original gate hoard, he could have swallowed up the whole wild gate himself and had done with it. But he didn't have the power, and Danny, who most definitely did, lacked the knowledge and skill to overmaster the formerly captive gates. Nor was Wad interested in teaching him. The last thing he needed was for the boy to acquire serious deftness. He was dangerous enough as it was. Through it all, he kept feeling a nagging worry about Anonoe. It got more and more intense. You're just being a fool, he told himself. She really can take care of herself. Only when it was clear that there were no more mages coming through the wild gate did it finally dawn on Wad that it was not like him to worry overmuch about someone else's safety. Not with the kind of nagging, pestering concern that had been bothering him. If Anonoe wanted to call for his help, and if she really did have a slice of her Ba inside him, wouldn't it feel just like that? What if that worry was actually Anonoe screaming for help? But the feeling was gone now. So apparently she had dealt with it. He gated back to the room they had shared, in a house whose owner was away for the season. It was only as he stoked the fire to warm the room for Anonoe's return that he realized that there was another reason why her calls for help might have stopped. The sickening dread he felt now was nothing like the feeling that had nagged him while he supervised the transfers at the Great Gate. It was so obvious when he had genuine personal dread to compare it with. She really had been nagging at him, shouting at him to get her out of there. Wad made a gate to Kiel's office and nearly went through it at once, until he remembered that Anonoe, too, had been confident that she could deal with any problem that might arise. He shrank the ends of the gate until it became a mere viewport, and brought it to his eye to look through it. There was no one in the room. He looked around twice until he thought to lower his gaze to the floor. It was the gown Anonoe had been wearing when she left.
It lay on the floor, discarded.
No, not discarded. It was filthy.
No, it wasn't filthy. It was soaked in ash and bodily fluids, which also extended out from the gown where the head and hands and feet should be. She had been burned to death, but not by an external fire, for the dress wasn't even singed. In his life on Middleguard before he closed the gates, Wad had seen what murder looked like when a fire master heated someone's body from the inside until it was utterly consumed. It was Anonoe's dress, and what was left of her dead body was still wearing it. Keel had been partly right when he thought he was spied on. When Anonoe went to talk to him, it wasn't a spy who waited to intercept her. It was Queen Bexoy herself. Bexoy, the Fire Master.
Chapter 21. Intimacy. Danny knew that his parents expected him to come back to the compound after everyone got back from their instantaneous trip to Westall. There was a war about to start, using magery with a scope and intensity that had not been seen in Middleguard since the 7th century. But Danny had no intention of taking part in the war, not the way they would expect him to. They would hold councils and plan strategies. They would be practicing to see what they could do with their newly enhanced magery. Danny also knew that he couldn't just go back to high school and sit it out. He would have to be involved in this war, like it or not. But war or no war, he was not going to drop out of high school. He had not slept in 34 hours when he came back to Parry McClure just as school was letting out. Nobody noticed him in their rush to get to the buses or the parking lot or just plain out. That is, they noticed him enough to not bump into him, but few of them realized as they passed him in the halls that he had been absent all day. Whatever their normal response would be to seeing this normal kid on a normal day, they did. A wave, a nod, nothing. He didn't see any of his friends. Had they all ditched? Had something happened to them?
Danny, said a girl.
Someone touched his back. Danny turned. It was Nikki Leader.
Dad was so worried when you didn't come to practice this morning and then you weren't at school and nobody answered your phone.
Sorry, said Danny. Family emergency.
I was sure it was something like that.
Her hand was resting on his waist. He almost hadn't noticed it, the move had been so subtle. But it was a girlfriend thing, he knew that. A possessive gesture that communicated to anybody passing by, he's mine, I have the right to do this. He didn't want to hurt her feelings by removing her hand. So he turned partly away, then back again. It broke the contact. I should have called, he said.
I understand completely. So will Dad. He's so gruff people don't realize that he's really very concerned for all his athletes.
Yeah, and he's a complete asshole to anybody who isn't one of his athletes. But Danny didn't say it. The hand was back, except that because he wasn't facing her, she was touching his waist right at the top of the zipper, her thumb hooked onto the waistband. It was a surprisingly intimate place to touch him. Maybe if he didn't wear his jeans so low, but he had always worn hand-me-downs that were a little small on him or way too big. The former had to ride low so there'd be room in the crotch. The latter rode low because they were on the verge of falling off. Now that was where pants felt comfortable to him. But it also put her hand very low on the front of his body, and for a long moment that's all he could think about. And in the silence between them, he knew that's exactly what she intended. Innocent little Nikki wasn't all that innocent. Whatever it was that had led her to kiss him that time, it was still there. She hadn't given up. She was still offering. Or was she demanding? This didn't seem like the same girl he had talked to that day in the leader's kitchen when he had healed her and changed her life. By not letting it end, of course, but also by restoring her to strength and health, and by talking with her like a normal person instead of an invalid. Apparently he had made much too great an impression on an impressionable girl. He could just remove the hand, but the lingering presence of her hand so near his groin was obvious enough now that he felt the need to say something aloud. There's only one woman who has the right to touch me there, he said. And it isn't you. She didn't remove the hand. What girl wouldn't remove her hand when the guy said something like that? Instead, she answered,
Who is it then?
My wife, he said.
But you're not married.
Now at last he took her by the wrist. He couldn't understand why he felt so reluctant to move her hand away, or why, in the moment that he took her wrist, what he really wanted to do, what he almost did, was move her hand lower to a place that was already eager to welcome her touch. But he didn't do it. He pushed her hand away more roughly than he originally meant to, because it was so hard to do it at all. I'm not married, he said. That's the point. And then he walked away, which wasn't all that easy. He needed to reach a hand inside his crotch to readjust himself and couldn't really do that in a crowded corridor. Instead, he ducked into an empty classroom and, not caring whether she followed him and found an empty room, gated himself to the spot on the hill where he and his friends regularly met. And there they were.
Well, hello, said Lorette. Where were you all day?
And what's her name?
Asked Sin.
Whose name? Asked Zina.
Sin just rolled her eyes looking at his bulging jeans and laughed. Zina looked too and laughed. Danny sat down at once. You guys are twisted, he said.
Name, said Sin. Say who or we'll cut it off.
I was walking through the halls at school, said Danny. Always a dangerous place, said Hal, who clearly had no idea what they were talking about. When I ran into Nikki Leader, said Danny.
Apparently very slowly, said Sin.
The coach's daughter, said Wheeler. What about her? She's kind of a nothing person, said Hal. She never seems connected to anything.
She was at the point of death when she suddenly got better, said Lorette. Maybe it takes a while to rejoin the world.
She's all for joining Danny, apparently, said Sin.
He closed his eyes. I didn't sleep at all last night. And to forestall Sin's inevitable lurid assumptions, he told them what had happened and what it meant. War. Everyone in the families understood that Danny had made all the gates that anyone had used. Everyone knew that if they offended him, Danny could gate anyone to anywhere. That had always been true of any war that involved gate mages. We're like kickers in football, Danny said to his friends. We wear the uniform, but we're not really part of the team. We play a completely different game.
Just beware of roughing the kicker, said Hal.
Do you even know what roughing the kicker means? Asked Lorette.
Just because I look like a goalpost doesn't mean I don't understand the game, said Hal.
Pat was the one who moved the discussion to a practical level.
How can you even think about high school when you know that the whole world is about to change?
I can't, said Danny. But it's the only thing I can think of to do. If I go to the family, they'll be all about how I can move the enemy mages all over the place, which I'm not going to do.
Why not? Asked Sin. I mean, they're your family.
I kind of thought you guys were my family, said Danny. You didn't spend my whole childhood despising me and threatening to kill me if I couldn't raise a clan.
The question isn't whether you want to fight in a war, said Wheeler. It's going to happen, and it's going to involve you.
Why? Asked Zina. Why does he have to get involved? Why can't he just study for the SAT like everybody else?
First, said Hal, Danny doesn't study for anything, ever.
They all nodded their agreement.
I study, said Danny.
Like never, said Lorette.
I studied.
When I was homeschooled, said Danny. High school just hasn't caught up to what I already learned.
Second, said Hal.
Thus proving that Hal can count all the way to two without losing his place, said Sin.
Second, and this is the actual point, when people start getting hurt, Danny's going to get involved because he's the only combat medical officer in the whole war.
Danny remembered how carefully the family always avoided discussing why casualties had been so much higher in the wars since 632 AD. Everyone's powers were reduced, but there were no gate mages to heal people. Now there was Danny. And the North family undoubtedly expected that Danny would use his healing gates only for the good guy team. That's why I don't want to talk to my family about anything, said Danny.
because sooner or later they're going to catch on that I intend to use Gates to heal everybody.
On both sides, said Pat, as if to make sure he really meant it.
On all three sides, said Danny, because whenever there's a war among the gods, they end up using drowthers as surrogates. Mage-to-mage combat is rare and potentially destructive. So they're going to get the Danai to come attack the Trojans.
Danai is what the Greeks in the Iliad called each other, Wheeler explained to Xena.
And where did you learn that? Asked Xena.
From a role-playing game in fourth grade, said Wheeler.
I'm so tired I could die, said Danny. That's one thing that passing through a gate doesn't fix. I'm fit, I could run for miles right now and hardly feel it, but my brain needs to sleep. I think if I did run, I'd fall asleep doing it.
What do you think these guys will do now that they're, like, really powerful? Asked Wheeler.
Is this going to be like NASCAR wheels? Asked Hal. Are you going to pick your favorite family and root for them in the Wizard War finals?
My whole life, when I wanted a taste of something magical, I had to play a video game or roll a bunch of dice in an RPG, said Wheeler. But Danny's given us rides around the world, or at least the places around here, but instantly. And that was cool, don't get me wrong, but that's like a transportation spell. Very convenient. But I want to see some really major combat spells.
There are no spells, said Danny. Just persuasion.
Yeah, well, I want to see a wind mage persuade him a tornado, said Wheeler. And Clance, I want to see a stone mage turn stone into a walking monster like the Incredible Hulk.
A tornado's a terrible thing no matter how it comes into existence, said Danny.
And your stone Clance isn't going to care who it tramples.
I know that, said Wheeler.
And I deplore it, abhor it, I roar it, as you bore us, said Hal.
And we ignore you, added Lorette.
I didn't make the magic come back into the world, said Wheeler. Can I help it if it's exciting? All those extras in the movies who run screaming from Godzilla or wave like idiots when the aliens come to blow them up in Independence Day, sure, they get squished, they get barbecued, but they were there.
You'd buy tickets to anything, said Sin.
I would, said Wheeler. Once.
Danny sighed.
I just wanted to go to high school.
Why? Said Lorette.
I mean, we're glad you're here, but why would anybody in his right mind choose to spend your days like this?
Sitting in the woods? Asked Pat.
Down there in Parry McClure, said Lorette.
Come on, Rhett. You've got the system sussed, said Xena. You've got the teachers and the principal eating out of your hand. The office staff loves you. Your grades are good and you've got a great body. There is just no reason why you should be allowed to hate high school.
Because it's not how I'd spend my day, said Lorette, if I had a choice.
But Danny does have a choice, said Pat.
Danny was thinking that if Lorette came from one of the families, her ability to make people from every group like her might be considered a sign of man-majory. Then Pat turned the conversation back to him, and he could barely remember what they'd been talking about. He was that sleepy.
High school is boring, said Danny. And if anybody cared, you could finish the whole curriculum in a year. It's mostly just the tool for keeping kids out of the workforce and out of criminal activities for at least half the day. But I swear it looked like the coolest thing in the world when I was reading about it in young adult novels.
Young adult novels, said Pat, are no closer to reality than Wheeler's video games.
Wheeler laughed. Reality is so overrated. In between catastrophes, it settles down to the most boring possible explanation for everything.
That can't happen until it does. Things don't work that way. Until they do.
Girls can never find a god to fall in love with, said Xena.
Until they do.
Girls find gods to fall in love with all the time, said Pat.
Then they wake up pregnant and the god is gone. All that's left is an asshole.
Everybody laughed at that. Even Danny, tired as he was.
Who's the father of your baby? Oh, Daddy, it was a god, said Pat.
What does he look like?
Oh, Mother, he forbade me to turn on the light and see his face.
Nobody ever wants to admit they fell for a lying moron. Every bastard ever conceived is the love child of a god. Yeah, but there's also been a lot of genuine Drowther boinking, said Danny. The Mither Mages have a lot of descendants scattered through the human race. In fact, by now I'd say that every living human has a Westilian ancestor. So why didn't the Great Gate waken the mage in me? Asked Hal. Maybe it did, said Danny. It takes time to learn how to find your affinity and make things happen. Right then, a little dust devil formed in the middle of the group, stirring up a bit of dust. And then it was gone almost as soon as they noticed it. Okay, who did that? Asked Danny. Nobody said anything. We're talking about finding your affinity, said Danny, and one of you shows the power of a wind mage. The dust devil reappeared and then skittered over to spatter dust and leaves on Wheeler. He jumped up and brushed himself off. Sneak attacks are against the rules, he said, brushing himself off. You wanted to have a monster chase you, said Hal. Seriously, who did that? Asked Danny. Everybody acted innocent. They were all curious about it, looking at each other, but nobody fessed up. What's the point of hiding who can do this? Said Danny. That's really good. That's like what a second-year wind mage learns to do. And dumping the stuff on Wheeler, if that's who you were aiming at, that's why I call it a second-year thing. Nobody can do that in their first year. Danny watched to see who showed pride when he said that. But nobody showed anything on their faces, which is why Danny was reasonably sure that it was Pat. She was the only one who could keep her face a complete blank when she wanted to. But if she had some reason for not coming forward in front of the others, Danny would respect that. I know why you're in high school, Danny, said Sin. It's your secret identity. Clark Kent at the Daily Planet, said Lorette. Without the glasses, said Sin. And you don't even need a phone booth, said Hal. He doesn't wear a costume, so he doesn't need to change clothes, said Lorette. Or a bat cave to keep his car in. Or anything. But it's still his secret identity, said Sin. By day, a mild-mannered high school track star, Lorette fake quoted. By night, Loki, Mercury, Thoth, faster than a speeding bullet. Mightier than a thrown spitwad, said Hal. Able to leap onto curbs in a single bound, said Pat. And look inside the girl's bathroom whenever he wants, said Wheeler. You could, said Zena. But why would you want to? It's poo and pee just like boys. Not just like boys, said Wheeler. Most definitely not. How did we get onto poop and peeping toms? Asked Pat. I don't spy on people without a reason, said Danny. Yeah, like you want to see whether they drop their dirty undies on the floor or put them in the hamper, said Lorette. Danny lay back and closed his eyes. Wake me when it's over. It's over, said Pat. Because we're all growing up. Right now, I declare puberty to be finished. I hope not, said Wheeler. I was really hoping for more body hair. All the girls but Pat said, "Ew!" at once. Wheeler was delighted. I'm supposed to be at track practice, but I've got to get home and sleep, said Danny. It's getting cold and the sun is still up. Supposed to be a storm coming through tonight, said Zena. Not snow, said Lorette. No, just rain, said Zena. To make little things grow. Zena likes to make little things grow, said Hal. As long as they're attached to Danny North, said Lorette. Zena turned on Hal in fury. Hal, she growled. Before she could say anything or throw something at him, Hal moved away. Why are you going after me? It was Lorette who... Girls can say things like that to each other, explained Pat. I've got to go talk to my parents, said Danny. And I have to get Vivi to write out an excuse for my absence today. You need to get a nap first, said Pat. Do you think they're going to do like Zog and Superman 2 and make the president kneel to them in the Oval Office? Asked Wheeler. If they feel like it, said Danny. If they even care. And then Danny said, they won't make anybody kneel, but they'll definitely want to get control of the Army and Navy and Air Force and all. Because we're not immortal, and so we have to know where the weapons are so we don't get blown up or beheaded while we're trying to control a clamp 100 miles away. Especially because weapons got really powerful since the gate thief closed things down in 632. So you don't necessarily get advance warning. It really is going to be war, said Hal. Yeah, said Wheeler, grinning. Danny,
Take me home with you just for a minute, said Pat.
Several woos and whoa-hos from the others.
I need to talk with you, said Pat, rolling her eyes.
Please put your baby in me,
said Hal in a falsetto. Let's get out of here so they can gossip about us, said Danny. He reached out a hand for Pat. She took it. He gave it to his living room, and the moment she saw where they were, she clung to him, her whole body pressed against his, hungry, frightened.
It really is war, she said.
What you did with the Great Gate last night and this morning, taking all the mages in the world through it, because that disloyal bitch, she stopped herself.
No. If you're not angry, I'm not going to get angry.
I'm angry, said Danny. I just can't do anything about it, so why develop an ulcer?
People will die, she said. You could die.
If somebody blows you up, who'll put you through a gate to heal you?
It's not likely, but it could happen, said Danny. I'm more worried about a completely different enemy, though. One who can take over people's bodies and control them.
Pat looked up at him without letting go.
You're talking about being possessed by the devil.
Who knew it was true? Asked Danny.
But it is. And I don't even know if anyone would be able to tell if I was taken over.
I'd know, said Pat.
Would you? Asked Danny. I'm worried that maybe I wouldn't even know.
If somebody was inside you, making you do stuff against your will?
Pat shook her head.
You'd know. And I'd know because I'd test you. I'd ask you a question, and if you didn't know the answer, I'd know it wasn't you.
She pulled on his head and neck to draw him down and kiss him. Then she licked the tip of his nose.
I'd ask what I did right after I kissed you.
What if he had access to all my memories, said Danny. What if he could answer all the questions?
I'd still know, said Pat.
She kissed him again, this time long and hungrily. Her hands moved across his back, gripped his buttocks. He pulled away from her.
No, he said. This isn't a game for me, said Pat,
like for the others. I'm not playing sleep with a god and tell your friends.
I love you, Danny North.
I'm not too young to know that. Girls married a lot younger than me. Juliet was 13.
That was fiction, and it didn't end all that well, said Danny.
You're going off to war.
When you told us what you spent all night doing, I thought, what if something had gone wrong? What if Hermia had trapped him or tricked him and he simply never came back? And instead of crying when I thought that, my hands just instinctively went to my belly, my empty uterus. It's an instinct, Danny. We want to be pregnant when our man goes off to war.
I'm not going to make any bastards, said Danny. Period. Ever. You think your parents are ready to let you marry a high school kid with no job who lives in a shanty like this?
I don't care about marriage, said Pat.
People don't. They just don't care about that.
The smart people do, said Danny. The people who want to raise a family and not just get pregnant.
She had her hands inside his waistband and was pushing downward on his pants. He thought of Lana the first time he met her in Stone's house in D.C. His body was responding the same way, only this time he wasn't surprised and frightened. If anything, he wanted Pat more than she wanted him.
I love you too, said Danny, but I'm not one of those gods. And just as she got his pants down to his thighs, he gated her away back to her own bedroom. He wanted so badly to go through that gate after her. Instead, he ate the gate so Hermia couldn't use it to get into her house, just in case she decided to start going after his friends. And then, too tired to make a decision about pulling his pants back up or taking them off the rest of the way, he gated himself to his own bed and fell asleep exactly as he was. He dreamed of her, though. He vaguely remembered dreaming of other things. Forgotten things, strange things. He dreamed that she was on the bed beside him, pressing herself against him, naked, whispering to him.
I love you, Danny, she whispered.
In the dream, he held her, explored her body. He tried to kiss her, but for some reason she evaded his kiss. He laughed and moved his hand up to her face, and still she tried to turn her face away when he went to kiss her. He was ready to explode with desire for her. She didn't want his kisses, she wanted his baby, and that's all he wanted was to give her that. In the dream, his body was poised over her. She was pulling his hips down. Then he kissed her before she could dodge. It wasn't Pat. He opened his eyes. It was Nikki Leader, the coach's daughter.
"I came to see you. The door was unlocked," she whispered. "And here you were, so ready for me."
It still felt like a dream, but it also felt completely real. Real, but with the cloudiness of a dream in his mind. Nikki Leader, not Pat at all. He didn't love Nikki, but she was naked under him, and he knew how much she wanted him, and at this moment all he could think of was that he wanted her, too. Not her, but a woman. The woman here under him, the woman who had come to his bed, the woman in this extraordinary dream. "No, it's not a dream," said something inside him. "It's not a dream. It's someone who has the power to cloud your mind."
"You want me inside you," said Nikki.
"Yes," said Danny, even as something in his mind screamed at him. "Listen to what she said. Listen to what you just agreed to. It's not you inside her. It's someone asking to come into your body, and you said yes. You said yes, you fool." And in the moment of ecstasy and release, he could feel it. This thing entering him at the groin and filling his whole body, taking control of his body. He tried to fight it, tried to move, but already he couldn't. Already it had him. He could feel his body roll off the girl. He could see her lying there, gasping, looking confused, looking relieved, and then weeping. "That's right, Nikki," his own lips said, though he was not speaking and only found out what they were going to say when they said it. "I'm gone now. You can have your body back, nicely healed by Danny North here. Maybe pregnant. Wouldn't that be nice? Now be a good girl, get dressed, and go home." Danny's body sat up and watched her as she gathered her clothing and put it on, still weeping softly. "I enjoyed being inside you," said Danny's mouth. "You're a sweet thing. And you'll find that this all becomes like a bad dream, and then like a good dream. And then you'll miss me, you really will. They all do, the ones that live." And Danny was thinking, "He was here for weeks. He found me weeks ago when I came to Leader's house and healed his daughter. Was he already inside her then, or did he find her afterward, take control of her when she was clean of her cancer? Maybe Danny could have fought him off any other time, but now, asleep, exhausted, half in a dream, and then the dragon asked him through Nikki's mouth, asked him to let him come into Danny, and Danny said yes. "But I didn't realize what I was saying. I thought I was consenting to the sex, and it was sex in a dream, not real. Nothing was real. It's not fair. Except this was war. Shaped like love a moment ago, but it was the crucial battle in a war. The enemy had stolen a march on him, was suddenly in a place where he wasn't supposed to be. Now he has control of a gate mage. But he doesn't," thought Danny, "because I can still think these thoughts. I can still..." Danny tried to make a gate and pass himself through it to see if he could shed this creature like a disease. His own throat said. The glottal stops that said, "No, no, no. Let's make a gate for her to send your little girlfriend home." In that moment, Danny learned several important things. The dragon had no idea that Danny really had just gated his girlfriend home, the real one, the one that he hadn't had sex with. The dragon also had to use Danny's mouth to talk to him. It couldn't just put thoughts into his head. So it wasn't completely in control, and didn't even have complete access. He controlled movement and he controlled speech, but that was all a matter of muscles. Except he could block Danny from creating the gate he wanted to create. Could he make Danny create one? No, no, that's not the question. Not the question at all. Inside Danny's heart horde, he now realized who had been warning him, screaming at him. Loki's gates. Loki knew,
Loki had never been possessed, so his out-self could not remember having been possessed by Set. That meant Loki was observing him from the outside. From another planet, however many light years away it was, Loki had realized what was happening, had seen past the fog in Danny's mind, past the belief that it was an erotic dream, into the truth. But what Loki's gates did remember was being given. They knew how one gate father could give the obedience of his gates to another. And so Danny tapped into their kinetic memory, and with their consent, Loki's gates obeyed him and showed him how to give them back to Loki. The act of giving back the gates didn't move them or make them. Those would have been physical acts, apparently, and the dragon who possessed him could have felt such an action, could have blocked it. But in all likelihood, the dragon had never possessed a gate mage who gave a gate to another. It had no idea what was happening. He felt his control over Loki's gates slip away. But now he knew how to do it. So again, without moving or making his gates, leaving them wherever they already were, Danny gave all of his own gates, every one of them, to Loki. And just like that, they were not under his control. He was still aware of them. They were still where they were supposed to be, but they weren't his. They didn't belong to Danny North. Nikki was dressed now. Danny could feel it when the dragon gave the command to make a gate to take her back to her home. He could sense that the dragon knew how to do it, knew where both the mouth and the tail of the gate should be. But no gate came rising out of the heart horde at his command. No gate formed. Danny felt a kind of blindness come over him. No, it was rage. Fear? It wasn't an emotion of the body. It was a transformation of some kind within the dragon itself. And then Danny's own body responded to it. Blood flowed hard and hot, his face flushed. "What's wrong?" asked Nikki, sounding frightened. Danny's body rose from the bed and stood on the floor, pants dropping around the ankles, but definitely not aroused, not as it had been. No, it was filled with rage and terror, and it screamed. Nikki screamed back and then ran from the room, ran out of the house. Danny heard the screen door slam behind her. "What have you done?" demanded the dragon in Danny's own voice, with Danny's mouth and throat and lungs, his tongue and teeth.
"I've done nothing," Danny said silently. "I gave a gift to a friend."
"The gates are still there. I can feel them," said the dragon. It used Danny's body to dance around the room, jump up and down, as if somehow this would jar something loose.
"You're a gate father. I took a gate father. Why can't I touch your gates?"
He ran to the kitchen, and Danny understood that his body was in search of a knife. It was the animal mind that sought for one. For the first time, Danny could feel the distinction between animal intention and his own will, his own ka. The animal's desire did not reach inside him and kindle any answering wish. The body wasn't his to control now, but he was still inside it, still absolutely tied to it, feeling all its sensations. The knife was in the hand. It stabbed down into Danny's thigh again, again. The pain was excruciating. The dragon felt it too. He groaned in agony.
"Make it better," said his own voice. "Make a gate."
But there was no gate that belonged to him. Another stab.
"You'll bleed to death unless you heal this. Do you understand that?"
"I do understand it," thought Danny. "I understand that I'll die. But what happens if I die with you inside me?" "Nothing happens," thought Danny, despairing, "because Set isn't tied to my body the way my ka is. When my body dies, I'm done. My ka moves away from here. But he will remain."
"I can keep it going after you bleed to death," said Danny's mouth. "Not terribly long, but long enough to get to somebody else. Someone you know."
He was trying to call up a clear memory. Danny immediately thought of Hermia. Hermia was the one. Let him find Hermia and take possession of her. I don't want your enemies. I want your damn friends. I want to make you watch me kill them slowly, rape them and kill them. I'll do it to everyone you love if you don't let me use your gates. And then they'll come for you and take you and execute you, and you'll be dead, not me. It wasn't even making sense. Was it crazy? I'll let you bleed to death, I'll keep your body going, and then they'll kill you again? No. Set was confused. His rage was clouding his mind. Because it was a human mind he was controlling. The human brain, rather. Because Danny's mind was still there, thinking his own thoughts. Hermia, he was thinking, imagining her body in a way he never had before, with desire, with lust. Never mind that it was someone else's body that he had felt all those desires for. The face he put into his memory, the name he thought of. They were Hermia's. One more time he stabbed. One more thrill of agony. But it didn't hurt as much. No, it did hurt, every bit as much, perhaps even more. But Danny didn't care as much. I'm detaching. My Ka is fleeing from the pain, from the threat of death. I can't let that happen. I can't let him drive me from my own body. I gave away my Ba, my out-self, all my unmade gates, but I can't let him take away my body or I'm dead. Literally dead. For a moment he had the idle thought, then I'll know. What happens to the Ka after the body dies? Do I return to Duat, as the desert hermit said? Or do I go somewhere else? Or just haunt the place I died? Or do I dissolve like smoke? But he stifled his curiosity and forced himself to connect with the pain, to feel it with the greatest possible intensity. You won't drive me out of my own body this way. As if the dragon could feel him dig his Ka more deeply into his own body, the dragon again gave a cry of frustration and rage. Bastard, he cried. You're no match for me. Give it up. No one ever withholds from me the thing I want. Obviously the statement was false, or it wouldn't have needed saying. But the pain in his thigh was a high price to pay for that small satisfaction, and Danny could feel the blood pumping out. This last time, Set had used Danny's own hand to drive the knife deep enough to find the femoral artery. I really am going to die. They'll rule it a suicide. Died by his own hand. Literally true and yet utterly false. In that moment, he remembered that there were other gates. The captive gates. Not Loki's and not Danny's own. Danny reached to make a gate, and this time the dragon let him, for now he felt for the first time the existence of the captive gates. Using Danny's mouth, Set cried out with triumph as Danny formed a captive into a living gate, passed it over himself so it could heal him, and then gave the gate to itself. Just like that, the gate was gone. But not before Danny himself was healed. No pain, no injury, no bleeding. The other captive gates sensed what had happened, and the clamor began afresh, now with a new goal, a different goal. Give me to myself and set me free, cried every captive in his heart horde. You bastard, muttered the dragon with Danny's mouth. It swung Danny's body around and smashed his head into the corner of the kitchen counter with such force that Danny instantly lost consciousness. He woke up hours later on the kitchen floor, alone in the dark. His head throbbed. He reached for another captive gate. No, whispered his mouth. What was he doing while I was unconscious? Was he unconscious too? No, he isn't as deeply tied into my body as I am. He was conscious and had nothing he could do but lie there feeling the agony. Or was it eased while I was asleep? You won't drive me out of my own head with pain, thought Danny. So if you refuse to let me use a gate to heal the body whose agony we both feel, then so be it. I can bear it. Or I can die. Whatever you choose. What you will not do is make a gate that lasts. Finally, Set relented and made a gate. Danny let him draw on one of the captives, and then, the moment the gate had passed over Danny and he felt no more pain in his head, Danny gave the gate to itself, and it was gone.
"What are you doing?" his own voice demanded. "I don't know what you're doing. How can the gate be gone?"
"But my head feels so much better."
"Until you learn who is master in this house, I will make your life pure hell," said Danny's mouth.
"I'm sure you can do that," thought Danny. "What you can't do is make gates that I don't approve of. And when we run out of captive gates, then you're done. Because none of my gates belong to me anymore. And so you can't use them."
Chapter 22. The Queen. When Annonoe arrived in Kiel's office, he wasn't there. Nobody was. Yet she could sense that Kiel was near. Now his dread was so strong it nauseated her a little. He was terrified for his life. Where was he? She looked up. He was hanging upside down from the rafters in the high-ceilinged room. His arms were trussed like the wings of a roasting fowl.
"When it all burns, won't he make a delicious smell?" asked a woman's voice.
Annonoe turned to see a woman standing in the doorway. She was simply dressed, like a peasant woman, and she was well along in pregnancy. Depending on how she carried, she might be 2 months from delivery, or the baby might be due right now. She smiled, and she was beautiful. Annonoe recognized her then, though the pregnancy, the clothing, and the great length of time since Annonoe last saw her from a distance had delayed her.
"My queen," said Annonoe.
She sent a calming influence to the queen, only to realize that Bexoy was already calm. No agitation at all, or none that Annonoe could feel.
"I know what you are," said Bexoy. "It's not as if you tried to conceal it. Who but a man-mage could interfere with so many of my most trusted friends? That is, without sleeping with them. And now I see who you are. You were pointed out to me years ago, back when you still shared my husband's bed and I did not. Annonoe, is it not?"
"It is," said Annonoe. Now she tried turning Bexoy's emotion to amusement. But again, there was no change in Bexoy's feelings. Until it dawned on Annonoe that Bexoy might have no feelings. Not about little things like murder and torture to advance her cause. She wasn't even angry, apparently.
"I've made a great study of man-mages, because once I discovered what I was, I realized that only two kinds of mages could thwart me. Gate-mages, but I knew the gate-thief would take care of them, and man-mages, because I feared that they would be able to overmaster me. So I learned all the lore about man-magery, especially what happened during the Great War of Dap-Nu-Dap, when the sand mages turned the steppe into a sandy desert in the effort to destroy the man mages of the far south. History is very important when you prepare to defeat enemies you haven't met yet."
"I admire your scholarship," said Annonoe. Through the shred of outself she had left in Wad, she called him urgently. "Take me out. Get me away from here. Take me now." But Wad must have been caught up intensely in whatever he was doing because there was no response. Not even a flicker of annoyance at the nagging doubt she knew she was causing him. "Come to me if you won't bring me." But still he ignored her.
"Your pet gate mage hasn't come for you yet," said Queen Bexoy. "Whatever could be wrong?"
Bexoy couldn't have had anything to do with the business with the great gate that had kept Wad from paying attention to her. But she clearly meant Annonoe to think that she had.
"We're both on our own," said Annonoe. "To match up head to head, so to speak."
"Nose to pretty little nose," said Bexoy, smiling slightly but without a trace of amusement. "Neither of us is particularly beautiful, though we've both learned how to appear more beautiful than we are. No doubt it came naturally to a man-mage like you. But to me,
It was painstaking effort to become a beauty. To know just what angle, just what degree of smile. Ambition is the great driver, but it lives on hope. I could persist in my study, in my solitary practice, in my hours before the mirror, because I had hope. I've heard you're a great fire mage, said Anonoe. I do well enough, in this decadent age of the world, said Bexoy. A self-seeming clant that bleeds, said Anonoe. Wad was so impressed by that simple illusion. Anonoe could not find any road into her. The woman had no emotions. I have no emotions, said Bexoy. I can see that you're frustrated. What do you think my studies taught me? That when man-mages send their outselves into a victim, they use the low road by preference, the deep emotions. So you block them by having no emotions, feeling nothing. It came quite naturally to me and helped me during the long years when my husband only desired you and ignored me almost completely. Anonoe knew of no road but the low road, no way into a person except by way of their emotions. But Bexoy must have learned of others. I should have studied more, thought Anonoe. But members of royal houses have better libraries than my father and his friends. There may also have been books in Gray that were lacking in Iceway. She thought of the things that Wad had just remembered about Set, the dragon, and how he possessed people completely, sending his very Ka into their bodies, instead of using the insidious Ba, the gentle outself. And still no rescuer comes for you, said Bexoy. I assumed I'd only have time to say a few words before you were gone. Or before dear Wad, my former lover, he did tell you that, didn't he? Moved me to someplace else. Yet he does nothing. He must have sent you here. But he's busy, isn't he? There's a great gate open between the worlds, said Anonoe. Soon the lands will be flooded with mages more powerful than you. Bexoy's face flared momentarily with excitement, but before Anonoe could exploit the emotion, it was gone. The great gate turns a needle into a bludgeon, even though a needle is so much more subtle and piercing. I will face whomever he brings here. No longer the gate thief, is he? Now he makes great gates. Anonoe did not correct her. Let her think Wad was still capable of making a great gate. Let Bexoy keep her fear of Wad, even if she had no fear of Anonoe. And yet the gate thief does not come to retrieve you. Do you think he sent you to me as a love offering? Here is your enemy, Bexoy. I give her to you so that your child can be born into a world at peace. Or did you think he really loved you? He loves no one. If Bexoy was gloating, she gave no sign. But the longer I delay, the more chances Wad will have to change his mind and come to your rescue. So I'll kill you now, I think, and use the heat of your body to ignite the wood of this building. Keel can see how powerless you are before the flames roast him. I'm betting he's still alive when the rope breaks and drops him down onto the burning floor. I really wouldn't want him to miss any of this. When servants choose the wrong master, it's very important that they understand their mistake. But then, did Keel ever have a choice? Mad mages like you don't let them. And here I go, talking more. But it's important to me that you understand just how thoroughly you have been lured, trapped, defeated. The gloating showed that there was some emotion in play here. Anonoe probed for it. Not an emotion of the body. Pride and ambition were emotions of the Ka, so they followed different rules. But it still offered a road in, and now Anonoe had it. She made a move, sending her outself to turn Bexoy's vanity into complacency and her complacency into unwariness. Instead, Bexoy's eyes widened. Is nothing sacred? She demanded. Are there no bonds between women? Anonoe thrust with all her might. And now Bexoy grew afraid, alarmed, The emotion touched her body. I have her now. I will win. At once, she felt her body grow hot, a fever beyond any she had ever felt.